Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Steve Buckley, and welcome to another episode of Open Government Radio. The best way for people to follow the discussion and to be involved is to open a new window. I ask that you go to my blog post for today, February 2nd, 2010, and you will see what we're going to talk about today, and along with a lot of or a number of links that we will be discussing, and so they'll all be handy there. And as I talk with my guests and with you about the topic today, then you can follow along and on your computer if you have access to one, and you can see which web pages we're looking at and referring to, and I think it'll make the radio show that much more robust as opposed to just listening to people yak. So anyway, but I'll try to keep it so that you don't people who are just listening can also keep up with what's going on, and you don't necessarily have to be looking at a computer at the same time. And for those who are listening to this on an archive, not live, then I think that'll make the experience that much more interesting too. So we'll give that a try. And today's topic, as you can see there, if you go to ustransparency.com, and I'll wait, I guess, a little while for people to get to that page. Like I said, this is for February 2nd, 2010. The call-in number, we're going to talk with the guests, and then after a while you can join the discussion by calling. The call-in number is 917-388-4210. And we do have a limited number of lines, so if you get a busy signal, that means that all the lines are taken, but I'll try to get people to say what they want to say and perhaps make room for other people if it gets to that point. And so keep trying if you want to get through. So let's see here. And today's topic, I'm looking at, to those who aren't pulling it up on a computer, is basically has open government, the open government effort, become so fixated on the transparency aspect that it is ignoring the public engagement aspect, meaning participation and collaboration? And the follow-on from that is, and if so, and if even if not, how do we measure the progress of federal agencies in complying with the Open Government Directive, in improving transparency, participation, and collaboration? And my first guest, I have two guests. The first one is Peter Levine, and he has, as you can see there on the website, but if not, he has written a blog posting saying, in essence, that he believes that transparency has gotten a little bit too much of the attention, and that we need to, and that the Obama administration has neglected the participation and collaboration aspects. And I will be introducing him shortly. I mean, I will be bringing him on in a second. And if you don't have a computer, then you can find that web posting, which is at www.peterlevine.ws. And I believe that was for, and the name of the, and that was for, what day was that? The 25th or 27th? Oh, 27th of January. If you go to that and find the link to his blog there, the blog posting is called The Path Not Taken So Far, Civic Engagement for Reform. And my second guest is Katie Delahaye Payne, and she is an expert on measuring public relationships. She's creating custom dashboards for measuring public relationships. So, which is particularly timely because on February 6th, the White House is supposedly going to unveil a dashboard for measuring how well they are engaging with the public on with respect to transparency, participation, and collaboration. So, anyway, let's see. I'm going to see here. It looks like I'm still getting used to the muting, and I guess, Katie, are you there?
I am. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very well. Okay.
Excellent.
Hold on. Let me see if I can bring in Peter. I think this is Peter. Let's see. Peter, are you there?
I am.
Okay. Very good.
Great.
Peter Levine, Katie Payne. You go by
Peter, nice to meet you. Yeah.
You too. You too. How are you?
Okay. Well, I guess you heard my intro to both of you. I wanted to start off with the aspect that Peter's posting, and then we can segue into the idea of, you know, well, just how do you get a better handle? How does one get a better handle on things like transparency and participation, collaboration, and so forth and so on? So I'll. Like I said, I've directed the listeners to go to ustransparency.com, and there's all the links that we're going to talk about today that we're going to be referring to. And before I tell people about there's just one housekeeping thing I wanted to tell people about that before I forget, that there is going to be another Open Government Directive workshop on February 17th in Washington, D.C. I'm one of the co-organizers with respect to that. And a minor one at that. I don't want to take credit for setting up these workshops. A lot of people have put effort into it. And if you go to at the very bottom of the today's ustransparency.com listing, there's a link there to the February Open Government Directive Workshop, and you can find out how to sign up and so forth and so on. And also there's a Gov2O camp in New England on March 6th at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. So for all those people in New England who haven't been able to go down to the Washington to get all involved in these Gov2O camps and so forth, which is, then they can check that one out, and there's a link there too. And, okay, having said that, we can go back to what we were originally going to talk about, which was kicking off with Peter's blog post about The Path Not Taken, Civic Engagement for Reform. And I should say that there's, Peter, I saw that link number one there. It says about Peter Levine. I went there, and I want people to know that there's a really well-done video there with you in it. And I'm like, wow, I wish I could have a video of what I, you know, saying something, of saying really deep stuff with all these neat, phantasmagorical things going on in the background and so forth. And I realize you didn't put that together. I guess it's considered an op-ed video that someone who does Song of a Citizen series or something like that.
That's right. Jeff Abelson did it entirely of his own, on his own, and it was his own idea, and he's been going around interviewing a lot of people involved in public engagement work and doing similar video op-eds for them. So Martha McCoy, the head of Everyday Democracy, and Carolyn Lukacmeyer, the head of America Speaks, and a number of other people have these things, and these are Jeff's gifts, which is very nice of him. So he was the creative mind. I was just a talking head.
Yeah, yeah. The pretty face.
That's right.
And just on that, before we go, offhand, do you know where one can go to look at those other videos?
I think songofthecitizen.org or .com has them all. Yeah, I think they're all together.
Okay, fine. And yeah, I've encouraged people, don't go look at it now because you're listening to the radio now, but it's only 4 minutes long, and it's a really kind of a neat thing. I think it sums up where what you're trying to say. Now I'll try to get you to quickly sum up, I guess, what you were saying in your blog post about the path not taken.
Yeah. Well, just I think I can be really brief. I would just say, to me, civic engagement or public engagement in politics and government is much, much broader than transparency. Transparency has a place, but actually I worry that if it's done only on its own, it can actually be counterproductive. But we could talk about that later. But certainly it's only part of what needs to be done. There's great promise in the Obama administration, regardless of where your politics are about in general. There's great promise for them to be innovative on the broad theme of public engagement, because the president himself has a record on that. Before he went into government, he spoke with precision and eloquence about it in the campaign. And on his first day in office, which is certainly symbolically important that it was his first day, he issued the order on transparency, participation, and collaboration. And I don't know whether to be critical or not yet, because I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, and I hope that there are wonderful things going on behind the scenes. But all I see so far is transparency. I see nothing whatsoever on participation and collaboration, and I think that's would be disappointing if it turned out to be the actual legacy. Now, maybe it's way too early to say, so I'm not necessarily a harsh critic, but I'm worried.
There's more of a concern.
Yeah.
And I think there are people besides yourself, and I'm one of those, who wish them all the best, and certainly everybody wants them to succeed in that respect. But I think you said things that I guess I was thinking the same way, is that, transparency and, White House visitor logs and data sets on various things can be fine, but the idea that alone, that alone will not engage people. And so I guess I think we're trying to be constructively critical in that respect. And so I know it can be hard in Washington, because there's a tendency to be thin-skinned or become thin-skinned, because everybody's always watching what you're doing and looking for screw-ups, and they might take your criticism as or the pundits, let's say that, mm-hmm. who don't understand may take your criticism as something to jump on their case about, and then of course they may be a little sensitive in that respect themselves. There was one thing that you said in your post. You were referring to giving an example, I guess, where the healthcare reform over this past year. Everybody, of course, was aware that that the Obama administration was trying to get healthcare to something to get passed. I guess since they started in the spring, or probably before that. But I mean, it started to get on the radar, our radar screen. I guess that there was a push in the spring, and of course we had the a push to get something done, I guess, before something passed before the August congressional break, and then they had all those town hall meetings, which, using the term loosely, town hall meetings, more like shouting matches, and then so forth and so on. And I wanted to ask Peter there, I guess, basically, what was it? Did you see that as an opportunity lost as far as engagement goes?
Yeah, I think it was a gigantic opportunity lost. I admit that a public engagement strategy might have failed, too. I can think of ways it would have failed, but here's the things you could think of doing briefly. I mean, one is you could have real dialogue and deliberation about what to do. The town meetings were precisely the opposite of that, and it wasn't, in my opinion, the fault of people who were deliberately trying to mess them up. They were constructed so that they would be messed up, because anybody who does dialogue or deliberation work knows that if you show up with a position you've already taken, and you're the public official, and you stand there, and you tell everybody the position you're taking, and then you allow anybody who shows up to express themselves briefly at the microphone, all that's going to happen is you're going to get yelled at. So all the practices that we might suggest for small group work and for facilitation and for actually listening and stuff, those were completely ignored. So that would be one thing. You could get real dialogue and deliberation on healthcare. The second thing is you could organize for it. Now you're talking mainly about your own supporters. You're not necessarily having a broad deliberation. You're talking about people who are bought into the idea, but you could organize for it in a participatory way. The campaign was brilliant at that. They did all kinds of organizing, and they deliberately built the skills of the people they organized with. They didn't just give them scripts and send them out to knock on the doors. They had them work out their own scripts and interview each other, and it was very innovative. They did nothing around that. And the third thing is they could have built public participation into the bill, so that after the bill was passed, people would have ways of engaging with healthcare. And some of those might have been transparency, but I don't think that's the key issue. I would be much more interested in things like healthcare co-ops as a cost control measure, where people would be able to participate in healthcare co-ops over time. The co-ops, actually, that's an interesting example, because they actually came up in the legislative debate. They were floated, but the way they were floated was simply as a ideological compromise. Liberal Democrats wanted single payer health insurance, and then failing that, they wanted a public option, and co-ops were floated as a kind of watered down public option. But there was no sense that one could actually innovate around forms that would let people be part of the ongoing governance. So three opportunities missed, and it's a menu, and they might have all different combinations of the menu might have made more or less sense. And it might have been impossible to do all three, because the very deliberative approach might have conflicted with the more ideological approach. But the fact they did none of the three, I find distressing.
I agree that who knows whether it would have made any difference. But the idea is that by not even walking their talk about engagement, spoke a whole lot about, spoke volumes, I guess, about what may or may not be happening. I asked Katie, perhaps. I know there was a town hall meeting where the president went to New Hampshire. Did he go to New Hampshire, or was it Maine, Katie,
town hall
meeting?
He's actually here today.
Oh, he's back again?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
And the reality is that, I mean, he does do town hall meetings much more in the way that they should be done, which is taking questions from anyone and anything. I mean, I think that, I think that the challenge is that you've got, on the one hand, you've got somebody, you get these theories of openness and transparencies, and then you've got the reality of, astroturfing and everything else that can now happen. And I think what we're seeing is that the astroturfing element to contemporary politics is just going to get rampant. I mean, it's out of control, and it's going to get worse, because for every time that, the right does one thing, the left does something else, everybody's innovating in great, wonderful ways, but I'm not sure it's actually helping the dialogue. But they're certainly doing more things out there to appear transparent and to appear to be encouraging dialogue, but I'm not sure it really does. I mean, but this is, the notion of having a town hall meeting live and in the flesh that is, populated by other people, that was going on during all the primaries and has always been going on in New Hampshire. I think what's more interesting is people gaming the system when Obama does something on YouTube, for example. The whole notion of the ability, what technology does is just give us the ability to, yes, give feedback, but to sort of automate the process of doing that feedback.
Right. Well, they're still trying to figure out the how they're, it's all experimental. It's still experimental, what combination and so forth, so you don't, so people don't, quote-unquote, game the system. And I just wanted to point out before I went on that the call-in number for people who would like to join the discussion, and I will open it up in a little while, is 917- 4210 and maybe back to Peter, as far as the idea, I mean, when I saw the president go out, you know, over the past year, it always seems I read in the paper that the president went to a town hall or arranged for a town hall, quote-unquote, town hall meeting on this subject or that subject, too, and they always use the word sell. And I think that's pretty transparent, I mean, pretty clear to me, that everybody knows that, that he's not going there for a to engage people in a dialogue. He may take some questions, but I think everybody realizes it's more of a pep rally than and a selling campaign or an infomercial than it is, the type of New England-style public engagement that we see at town meetings and so forth.
Well, you know, he's entitled to give a speech if he wants. I do wish the terminology were different because the key point is in a town meeting, the decision is being made by the people in the room. So if you invite people to something that is billed as a town meeting, you're saying you guys are going to make the decision, and then if you're absolutely not giving them scope to make the decision, it's a bit of an insult. But I don't think the terminology is the main problem. Most people don't know what a town meeting is anyway. I think the problem is that a deliberative approach wasn't taken. But I also think that a deliberative approach, and a deliberative approach, deliberation means decision-making, so a deliberative approach, there would be some degree of actual choice by the people in the room, not just interchanges. But a deliberative approach, again, would have been only one possible public engagement approach. Deliberation is only one form of active citizenship. There could have been several other ones. I think a deliberative approach would be hard to pull off in a high-profile national issue like healthcare, because I think a lot of people would be trying to wreck it.
Well, it gets back, I guess, to what constitutes engagement, and we can call it participation, we can call it collaboration, but I mean the idea basically that, and I think this is where Katie's work comes into play, the idea of before you can measure how well you're doing in that area, is you have really have to figure out what it is is.
Well, I mean, what's so funny is if you look at this, these directives and stuff like that, it's all about taking, you know, making baby steps towards openness and transparency. And I don't fault any of them. I mean, it's all perfectly fine little check marks that say, yes, you know, you need to make sure that your website is accessible and things like that. But, you know, what's fascinating to me is I was talking to somebody who's actually helping one of the government departments to actually try to do this stuff. And, you know, it was all about checking off the little check boxes that are on this list of things to do, not about making sure that people have actually heard the messages, understand the messages, and, in fact, are either, you know, sharing more, becoming more innovative. And you think about it. So you take a department, like the EPA, and, the mission of the department is to get clean, you know, make the environment cleaner, right? I mean, whatever the mission is. But say, take that as an example. And shouldn't all of this open government and transparency and everything else ultimately lead to a cleaner environment? And nobody's making the connection between all this little activity and the desire for openness and transparency and how you get your department to achieve its mission.
You know, EPA would be my example, actually, in a positive sense, because if you take a program like their CARE, which is what Community Action for Renewed Environment, that's a program in which the government is actually investing in developing the capacity of communities to manage ecosystems. So it's much more than just revealing information. I mean, that's a very small part of what it is, and I'm not sure how much use they make of information, but it's much more about skill building and partnerships. And, you know, that is demonstrably good for the environment. One of the disappointments is actually that we act as if we don't know how to do anything except maybe release information. But in fact, in departments like HUD and EPA and others, for example, Center for Disease Control, we have actually decades of experience in working, in collaborating with the public on problem solving.
Right. Center for Disease Control is the perfect example. I mean, they're absolutely doing a great job of both, you know, counting how many times they get their messages out there, because that's obviously important. I actually use them as an example in some of my speeches, because, yeah, their mission is to get the word out about H1N1 or whatever it happens to be that you want to tell people about. So they do that, but then they also make the effort to say, do people understand and act on it? How many people are getting vaccinated? How many people are asking for information? How many people are downloading what it is that they need downloaded? I mean, yeah, that's the CDC is a very good classic example of how to do it right. But at the same time, I think you also have to say, I mean, this whole concept of collaboration and engagement is, I totally agree with you, Peter. I mean, I think it's way underplayed, that what should be happening is you should be engaging the citizenry to solve problems, and I don't see that happening.
Well, the CDC example you just gave is not really the it's a good example of metrics and holding oneself accountable. It's not a good example of public engagement because it's private behavior that changes and information flow from the government to people. But I think there's actually a very rich set of real experience with collaborative problem solving through government. A lot of it's at the local level, but the federal government's also been involved through EPA and HUD especially. So, but it's disappointing to me that people with that kind of background and expertise are not represented very well or strongly in this administration. You would actually think that they would be particularly likely to advance in this administration.
You would think. But let me take this moment to just jump in here and remind people who they're listening to that there is a couple links there on at my webpage on U.S. Transparency for today, February 2nd, that talks about Peter's work. There's a link to him and also another one to Katie, but I'll just briefly go down here for people who aren't looking on the computer at the moment, that Peter is the research director for the Jonathan M. Tisch College of Citizenship and Public Service at Tufts University, and he's also the director of CIRCLE, which is an acronym for the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, which is part of the Tisch College. And then it goes on to mention associations that he works with, Charles Kettering Foundation, Deliberative Democracy Consortium, America Speaks, he's a board member, Everyday Democracy, and on and on. So I invite people to go look at that, and that's on the same page as that video that I was talking about earlier. Also, he's the author of The Next Form of Democracy. Is that right, Peter?
Actually, that's Matt Leininger, but it's a better book than any I have written.
Oh, okay. Oh, The Future of Democracy. I'm sorry. Yours is, that's what you wrote, Future of Democracy, Next Form of Democracy. Okay, but you're basically, yes, Matt Leininger.
But everybody should read Matt Leininger's book. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was a useful interjection.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing about now to Katie, she's been involved in this field of public engagement or public relationship measurement for 23 years. Katie, is that right?
That would be 23 years, yes.
Okay. And I'm looking at her, the link about Katie Delahaye Payne. So do you go by, do people call you KD Payne?
Yes. They call me anything. I mean, it basically the KD just came out of a job I had once where they wanted to make sure that everybody was gender neutral. So we had to sign everything Katie Payne, and so it just became Katie Payne. But actually, my name is, for Katie Delahaye.
Yeah. And anyway, her, as you can see on hers, I'll just rattle, I won't read the whole thing here, but it's the CEO and founder of KD Payne and Partners, and author of Measuring Public Relationships, The Data-Driven Communicator's Guide to Measuring Success. And the whole idea, yes, one thing that has been strong throughout the Open Government Initiative by the White House has been data. So I think if you start talking, we start talking, you mean you can get data on this stuff? That will get people's attention, because they've been talking about how wonderful data is. So I just want people to say, yes, there is a way, and yes, it involves data. And let me just rattle off some things here about Kay. Payne was named Entrepreneurial Venture Creator Person of the Year by the University of New Hampshire. an accomplished speaker. Payne frequently lectures to conferences and universities, including the Conference Board, the American Strategic Management Institute, the Public Relations Society of America, the International Association of Business Communicators, the Institute for International Research, and the International Public Relations Research Conference. And so there, so and people
Thank
can
you.
Find out more about you there. And certainly the thing I wanted to point out to people was that this coming Saturday, I'm not sure if it's going to come out before or after that, since it falls on a Saturday, but the White House, under its Open Government Directive, is supposed to come out with a dashboard on February 6th. And if people go to your website and to the one of the links there, they can see that in addition to the article that you wrote on measuring
transparency,
which you wrote last summer, but it's now becoming more timely as people are understanding that they do have to measure things, measure progress and so forth. There's the other one is, let's see, where does it go here? Developing a dash, it's number 5. I numbered these so people find number 5 link, developing a dashboard for measuring public relations. And if people follow that link, they can go and see that you're in the business of setting up online representations, a metaphor, I guess, for a dashboard that shows how an organization is doing with respect to things like, measuring the relationship. How engaged are our customers or citizens or whatever? Can you give us an idea? And I'm guessing that a lot of federal agencies are going to be looking at this.
Yeah, and we're working with some of them. And the whole thing is, you know, again, is to get them to articulate what it is they're trying to accomplish. I mean, just to say that I want collaboration and openness and transparency, you know, so what unless it helps your mission? So again, if it's a way to solve problems or if it's a way to get the word out, that's great. Give me that as a goal. And then from that, we build a dashboard based on what it is that you're trying to accomplish overall, and then what are the steps that it takes to get there. So, I mean, yes, you may well want to count how many times your messages got out there or how many times people are collaborating or participating in a conversation or contributing. And I'm a big one in terms also, because on my blog, katiepayne.blogs.com, in January, beginning of the year, January 4th, I actually wrote a post called Measuring Engagement, because that seems to be kind of the metric that everybody's striving for here in this effort, which is how do you get citizens more engaged with the government? You know, how do you get them to actually actively participate? And then how do you measure that? And what happens is that in this environment, people come and they might read something. That's not engagement. But if they come back 3 or 4 times, then they're sort of lurking around and they're trying to get more information. If they get to the point where they're actually asking a question or leaving a comment, then they're getting more engaged. And then if they actually, you know, spread the word and link and spread things around and leave an email address and register on the site, then that's a higher level of engagement. So what we typically do is say, okay, here are all the, you know, there's unlimited number of things you can measure. Prioritize and figure out what's really important to you. And then we put it all on a dashboard for you. And a dashboard is nothing more than an interface that allows you to suck in a whole bunch of information from different databases and spreadsheets and everything else and display it in one place. And so the technology of creating the dashboard is the least important thing. The most important thing is making sure you've got the right things on that dashboard, because whatever you put on your dashboard is what you're going to be focusing on and paying attention and doing more of. And it's, as I say, you become what you measure. Whatever's on your dashboard is what you're going to be doing the most of.
Mm-hmm. And so the idea, everybody likes the idea of a dashboard, but the gauges on that dashboard, you need to figure out what the gauges measure before you design the dashboard.
Yeah, and I think to be fair, I think in that open government directive where it spells out what you should, you know, what's on your dashboard, I mean, it's very simplistic stuff, and it's not what I would call meaty, you know, important metrics. It's much more about what activities have you done, and I think that's a mistake. I think people should go at this from the perspective of, you know, is all of this openness, transparency, and collaboration actually helping me do my job more efficiently? Am I contributing to a smaller, shrinking budget deficit? You know, am I making a difference by using my time more effectively because I've got everybody else out there who cares about this trying to solve the problem? And here's a good example in New Hampshire where they're trying to solve the insoluble problem of how do you sustain our park system when every single dollar has to be raised by revenue from people coming in and paying their daily use fee, but the daily use fees are going down, they're not supporting it, and so therefore the parks aren't as attractive and as nice, and therefore less people are going to the parks, therefore the revenue is going down. So rather than try to solve that internally, they're basically saying, hey, there are people out there in New Hampshire who care about the parks, let's engage them. Let's get their help to help us care for the park and come up with better ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So collaborative decision-making saves money.
Yeah, and I guess the danger, I guess, is that if you end up getting, is whether or not if you hire the, if you hire a government to do things that you can't do well for yourself, like plow the roads, for, I mean, at least for those who get snow, who are listening to this, to not try to hand out shovels so that people will do it for themselves. It's like, wait a minute, I hired you to do this. You can't do it well, then don't. And so I see, Peter, I guess, was talking about AmeriCorps in his blog post, but the idea is that, yes, service is, you know, a good thing, but is it really civic, you know, volunteerism? Is it just one aspect of engagement? And one thing that I wanted to ask before I forgot was that as we approach, hopefully after you can come back on, both of you later for other shows if you want to, but particularly with respect to this dashboard about what will be measured as far as federal agencies doing a better job, well, is there something, you know, of course we can't see it yet, but is there something that people should look for when they look at this dashboard for the first time to see what, you know, some general criteria that you would expect? And I guess what we're talking about is, like I said, transparency and open government, blah, blah, it's different buzzwords. But I'm asking this, I guess, of both of you, and I'll let Katie go first, but is there something that people should look for in this dashboard? And then, of course, we can kick it around after they release it. But I just wanted to know if there was some two or three elements there that it should have, regardless of you know, in any case.
Well, I think first of all, you've got some great opportunities to benchmark. And I bet you anything that's going to be the weakest part. You've got wonderful opportunities in government because you shouldn't be competing, you should be collaborating, and therefore you should be able to say, okay, this department with these 10 people was able to do this, this department with 20 people was only able to do this, what was the difference between the two? In other words, what's the so what? My phrase of the week is, measurement's all about the so what, right? So what if you do better this month than last? What did you do differently? So I think that what I would love to see would be some really good benchmarks and some really good so what's and some really good insights from all of this stuff. I'm afraid we're going to see I did a lot of this. Here's a list of all my activities.
A lot of sparks and smoke.
Yeah.
But so
yeah,
what?
Exactly. But so what? Exactly.
And I guess that would mean that they'd have to, when you say benchmark, of course, the idea that what are we doing, taking a survey of where we are now, if I'm a federal agency, saying, okay, this is what we're doing now, and or going on a diet, this is what I weigh now, and I might, you know, cut down on sweets and go exercise and so forth and so on, but so what? unless you weigh yourself before and after, you don't know if you've done anything. So, and I'll turn that now, Peter. Do you have any thoughts about what you'd like to see on this so-called dashboard or some aspect or criteria that you would like to see measured or gauged?
Well, I haven't thought through things like what data can be made available and collected, and what privacy issues and stuff. But I'll tell you the kinds of things I'd like to see achieved, and then whether they can be measured, I don't know. One is a true diversity in the users, because I very strongly suspect that what happens when you make public information available is that various kinds of professionals and people with whose job it is to use those data take almost all the use of it. So basically, data are a great advantage to lobbyists and reporters, and very little used by anybody else. So I would want, maybe the government shouldn't be collecting this because there are issues about privacy and so on. But as someone externally asking whether this was a good thing for the public, I would want to make sure that people who were not strong paid stakeholders using information for strategic purposes, but who were more ordinary people, were using the information. And then there'd be the question of skills. So what skills did people have coming into these websites and other, probably they're mostly websites, what skills did they have coming in? Did they know how to use the data? Did they know this? Did they have civic skills as well as technical skills? So to use environmental data, it's good to understand stuff about environmental science, but it's also good to know how to make a change in the community. So did they know that? And then did they gain any skills through using the information? Because typically, transparency just means giving the information to people who have enough skills to use it, and I don't think there's any skill building. But there are examples, like some of the EPA programs do involve teaching people to use environmental data. So are people learning anything? So that's a pre-post question. Are people more, do they have more skills afterwards than did that? And the third thing would be Katie's point, which is, does it make for better policy? Do you get, do you have better environmental indicators? I mean, does the environment improve, to put it bluntly, if you have these public techniques? I mean, I think that's we might not want to let that swallow up everything else, because there may be rights to information even if they're not even if the information is not going to lead to better policy. People may still have a right to it. A clear example, if I could just end with this, would be earmarking. I mean, I'm pretty sure that if you really publicize earmarks, you will actually increase their, or certainly do nothing to reduce their abuse, because people, as it's often been said, disclosure is the point of an earmark. A member of Congress who's earmarking something for a district wants that to be known, so that the person gets credit. Everybody gets credit for their own earmarks. And there's, even though they may get attacked by someone outside their district, there's no problem with that. Even if you're on cable news being criticized for your earmarks, it just plays well back home. So it's not a good technique at all for reducing earmarks. But I wouldn't argue that, that earmarks should be hidden, therefore. I mean, I think people just simply have a right to know how their money's being spent. I think the effects of that will be bad, generally speaking. They certainly won't be good. I mean, probably there's not much effect, because generally speaking, members of Congress not only disclose but advertise their own earmarks anyway, so that forcing disclosure will probably make very little difference. But what I'm saying is, I wouldn't always make improved policy the only criterion for whether something's successful.
Well, one could say that whatever, as long as your customers or your citizens or whomever it is that you're trying to help, if there's a consensus and it goes forward and it doesn't work, then you say, well, it doesn't. If everybody was on board, so to speak, you can't really say it was the wrong decision, because it was the best decision that everybody agreed with.
Well, there are different everybody's, though, right? I mean, so everybody in West Virginia thinks that it's great that Robert Byrd brought home billions and billions of dollars in federal transportation, and everybody in the rest of the country thinks it was bad. So, but
And I just meant that the more that one is able, and this is a matter of degrees. I understand there's no perfect thing where everybody's in the country is going to be consent with in any one thing. But the idea is that any organization that's more in touch and more responsive to its customers and to most of its customers is always going to do a better job, because they're the ones who they exist for. And And so,
well, I guess I don't think that's logically true. I mean, there's a lot of arguments in favor of, you know, so do we want our judiciary to be maximally in touch with public opinion, or do we actually want to deliberately insulate it by giving judges life tenure? Do we want the Federal Reserve to be directly responsive to customer pressure, or do we want them to be insulated? So I think it's actually a judgment call. And
yeah, but I mean, whatever we decide is what I'm trying to say is that whatever the system we have now is because we as a people didn't fall out of the sky.
Ah, mm-hmm.
Somebody chose it, and so we have what we have, not because it was forced on us, maybe by our parents or grandparents who said something like that, but as a people, we designed the system. And if we don't like it, if we like the way it is, fine. If we don't like the way it is, then it's we're in the driver's seat. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that's the definition of, to me, is at least, is that you can't blame, we as a people can't blame somebody else for foisting on something onto us. I think there's a saying that says the people of a country get the government they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, you know, it's you. I guess you don't get to pick your family, but you can kind of you do have a sense on how to pick your or to affect your own country and your own nation, even in a dictatorship. It's like it's not one guy at the top. He's got to be there with what public sentiment. Is that what you were saying, Peter, about Lincoln? You have to have public sentiment with you to be able to do whatever you're doing. So in that sense, I guess. But that's probably a subject for another time. We're getting kind of lofty here about things like that. But as far as the government, yeah, the open government dashboard will be coming out, I guess, on the 6th, and everybody will be, particularly the federal bureaucrats who will be trying to comply and do what they're supposed to be doing, will be very interested in that. So I certainly see that there's going to be some more.
What kinds of data could be on the dashboard?
Well, as a matter of fact, if you're looking, and for those people who are looking at the website, you know, I had listed your links to you and to Katie and so forth. That they scroll down a little bit more, there's I have other websites to which we may refer during this week's show, and there is a on C, ABC. There's the White House Open Government Dashboard, Seeking Your Input, and so in addition to the Open Government Dialogue last summer, they came back. The White House came back on December 16th, and asked people for some more input about that. And I guess it gives you a sense of, if you were to click on that and look at that, they're throwing out examples of quantitative measures and qualitative measures, which I'm trying to get my head around the difference between those two. They also say things like, we want your input about what metrics we should measure. And I didn't know you could measure a metric. It's kind of like measuring a yardstick.
Actually, I'll argue with that, because I think you have a metric like percent of people engaged in X, you know, percentage of people. Everybody still there?
Yep,
I am.
Sorry about that. My phone just went flying. The percentage of people that have moved from level one engagement to level two engagement in the governmental process in the Department of Interior or in CDC or whatever. That's the metric is that. It's the percentage of people. It's so you want to see whether you've moved up or down that scale. And I think that one of the things that I always counsel about and I always worry about is people say, okay, my metric is X. And they don't understand that, no, the metric is percent of change. It's not just the absolute, it's the percentage of change.
Mm-hmm. And metric, I think a lot of people are throwing around the term metric and measure.
Yeah.
to mean the same thing, but is that true? They're not exactly the same thing?
No, because the measure of success is more people are engaged in solving problems at the Department of Interior or the EPA. The metric is percentage of people. The metric is like the percent or the dollar sign or the something. You know, it's that absolute. Mm-hmm. That's always got to be a number. Whereas a measure may just be, you know, if you look at that open government the directive, there's a lot of measures in there that aren't metrics.
Well, could it be something like, and maybe for to make it more, let me use an example. You tell me if this is correct, because I don't want to sound stupid if I'm throwing around the term metric and measurement at the same time, so maybe you can help. But like in the Consumer Reports, you know, they have those charts when they're comparing different products in Consumer Reports. And it might be a different types of cameras or different cars or stereo system, whatever. And you see this little bar, and they go, oh, the top rated had a score of 82. And then the next one down below that, there's another little bar graph, and it says a 79. And it goes down, and you can see how it goes from this to this. You know, and they've given it some composite score based on, it appears, they measured how far the flash for a camera was, how clear. They have all these different aspects to it, but somehow they take those different things that are measurable, you know, how far the flash can go or how many megapixels the camera has and things like that. And then they come up with they weigh them and come up with a composite score. A lot of times the same way, I guess, your college professor says, I'm going to give you 30% for participation, and your final is based on this and that, and puts them all together, and you come up with a B minus or a C plus or things like that. So is the metric that composite score, so to speak? Is that an example of a metric?
Yeah, exactly. And what we encourage people to do is we have something called an optimal content score, which is whatever it is you're measuring, be it threads on Facebook or conversations in a private network or anything that you can conceive to measure, we basically go from the premise of what is your optimal content. In other words, if everything was perfectly open and transparent and collaborative, what would that look like? And that's a 10. And then, you know, and we in the process of consultations, we walk them through, here are all the possibilities, and here's what it looks like, and here's your optimal discussion type of conversation, and here's your worst nightmare. And how does it, and in the middle is, okay, it's just bland and neutral and balanced, and that's what it is. And then we get people to define what's a 10, what's a minus 10, and what's everything in between, so you can, in fact, come up with an index score around that which you consider good and bad. Problem that we find is the fact that depending upon the nature of the department and the nature of the business and the nature of the communications and the nature of the program, everybody's got different definitions of good and bad. So we get around that by saying, okay, here's your optimal score, here's your worst score, and we're just going to define that up front and then work from there. It's highly customized, but it's easy to defend frequently.
Well, and I guess if you have 24 I think I saw 24 federal agencies, I think is the number that will be, and there are more, but I know there are 24 that are are particularly affected or under this open government directive from the president, is that they'll all be on February 6th, this is what also is happening on February 6th, they'll be opening up their own individual web pages for open government and asking people for input there, too. And I guess I'm a little concerned is that they'll all come up with different metrics for 24 different things. And so that's where there's at least some concern on my part that they'll all go off without some standard.
Yeah.
That they'll all come up with their own idea of what transparency is and what the metrics for engagement are.
that's not a bad thing that they all come up with their own, but the problem is going to be how do you going forward compare one to the other, and that'll be the challenge of whoever gets all these ideas and has to figure them out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. No, go ahead. Because the challenge would be that, you know, as somebody who's doing measurement for 23 years, I would argue that that's not an easy thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter what they do, it's not going to be easy. But, you know, on the same hand, it's I sort of like the idea that everybody's going to come up with their own definition simply because I think that is good.
Yeah, although for the citizen, I mean, and I see the term, and probably Peter perhaps appreciates this idea that terminology is important, because if I'm a citizen and I go to one agency and they're having an informational session, and I go to another agency and they're having a deliberative caucus, and another one's having a town hall meeting, and like, okay, so what's going to happen? And I've, at the local level, seen this where you know, actually is what Peter was mentioning in his blog about being involved with the stimulus money. We're getting a new bridge, a new drawbridge in Chatham, Massachusetts, which is where I am on Cape Cod, and everybody wants to make sure that we end up with the right type, because this is an old-fashioned wooden drawbridge and it's all quaint and the tourists love to fish off it and so forth and so on. And so they've been having what they call informational sessions, and the next time it's called something else, and of course I'm looking at it with the eyes of a practitioner, so to speak, and trying to figure out what's going to happen at the meeting before I show up. And they never tell you, they just tell you as if informational sessions is all you needed to know. But people show up not knowing quite what to expect, and I'm sure some people don't go because they don't know what to expect. So the idea of standard terminology, standard practices, I think is important. But did you want to say something about that, Peter?
No, I had started the thread off about what they were going to measure, because I was wondering whether it was possible to do more than measure the clicks and around on the websites, but to do things like surveys and evaluations. That was my
And I
question.
Think actually the Katie did show me some bar graphs and so forth from the dashboards that she set up for coming, and they do we can't pull it up right here now, but I guess it did show me that it did get it down to specifics, so that you'd have a thing that would talk, that you would capture the number of, I guess, favorable responses, Katie, versus non-favorable versus neutral, so you get a better sense of, you know, okay, we've got a lot of people talking, but is it, you know, 90% negative or
yeah, but how about this, right? But that's expressing themselves, so I get that. But what about who they are, what they why they came, whether what they've done before, what they're going to do later? Is that
I'm asking
because I'm not sure that's even legal to do, but it would be interesting.
Oh, I didn't even think about the legal part of that. I mean, I was just thinking from a technology standpoint, how doable is that, you know, and how would you do that? And you can certainly weight them in terms of their influence, because everybody's got a rank out there according to, you know, most of these a million ranking systems out there. So you can certainly figure out whether they were important, but in terms of what are they doing, that you can't. It's not legal, because there's a post-Watergate law that says that the government cannot keep in any organized fashion track of how people are exercising their First Amendment rights.
And I'm sorry, guys, I just realized we've been talking so long. We haven't had any other calls. We have 1 minute to go. Oh, here we go. I've got a little voice just told me, I'm not sure if you heard that, but we have 90 seconds to wrap up. And like I said, this is something that is just the beginning of a conversation that I hope we can have helped ignite amongst other people who are now beginning to wrestle, particularly in the federal government, about what is public engagement and so forth, and how to measure it. So, and 60 seconds, a voice is telling me. So anyway, this is Steve Buckley, and this is Open Government Radio. And I appreciate Peter Levine for being with us, and Katie Delahaye Payne, and she and both of them. The information for this show is on the ustransparency.com website for February 2nd, 2010. And with that, I guess we'll just have to continue this next week. Like I said, we'll see what comes out February 6th, and I appreciate my guests for being here with, and joining us today.
Great.
Well, thank you so much for including me.
Bye.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening to Government, OpenGovernmentRadio.com.